There is a plan going on, right?
Yeah.
We're good.
Okay. Now, Lourdes, you've been an activist since you were young, and you joined CSO, then went out to organize farm workers, and I'm trying to get a sense of what is it that motivated you to become involved like this in the community and to organize farm workers 40 years ago, and what motivates you now? What drives you?
Well, once that you learn that you can make changes, or that people coming together, that we can create the type of power that is needed to make policy changes, it's just very, very exhilarating, because you can see that the work that you do has really definite results, and that those results are results that help people. And once you learn how to do that, then you want to keep on doing it. Because there are so many issues, so many problems in the world, and it's almost like a solution, a magic solution that can happen if people just come together to make it happen.
Was there a particular incident that happened to you, or something that that se le prendió el foco, something happened that, mm-hmm. when you were young that all of a sudden made you realize that power?
Well, once that I met Fred Ross and learned about organizing, and he showed us what the CSO had done in terms of electing the first Latino city councilman to Los Angeles, Ed Roybal, bringing in street sidewalks and bringing in streetlights into the barrios of East Los Angeles, putting police in prison for beating up Mexican Americans, all of these things were just something that I had always hoped that someday we could make these changes, because the same thing was happening in our community. No representation whatsoever, no political representation. So then when we learned and we started organizing in Stockton, California, then we were able to accomplish, some of the same types of changes that they had done in the community service organization in Los Angeles. And that was... I felt that was so powerful that I felt that I wanted to commit my life to doing that.
Okay. Committing your life is a long time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. David, I'm hearing a hum on my headphones that hopefully you're not hearing yours, but
I'm not hearing it on the return, so.
I hear a hum too.
You hear a little hum too?
Okay.
I think it's the room. Okay, so it's nothing extraordinary. Okay. Tell me when we're off. Okay. So we start out with the idea you could make change from basic experience at CSO, but at what point did you make the leap? And to applying these ideas to farm workers and realizing that we could, and what happened that you could say, oh, some of these ideas about organizing we can apply to farm workers. Was there a particular incident, or was an evolution that happened?
As we were doing the community organizing, then we saw that the most poverty-stricken people were the farm workers, and that they had all of this discrimination against them. So, the idea came out, well, wait a minute, we need to do something about farm workers, and what is the solution for that? And, of course, a union is a solution. And myself and a priest named Father McCullough, we worked together. I started, I organized a group of farm workers in Stockton of about, several hundred farm workers. We call them the Agricultural Workers Association. And but then, that didn't take off, because we turned it over to the AFL-CIO, became the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee. And, but at least we knew how to do it. We knew that we could make those changes if we just got the workers together to start pressuring to make those changes. We were able, in the community service organization, we were able to change some laws, like getting disability insurance for farm workers, something that they never had, getting the right to a vote in the Spanish language on Spanish ballots, being able to do voter registration door to door, you know, getting public assistance for people who are legal residents. These are laws that we passed under CSO, which we did all through having all of our different chapters put pressure on their legislators. So this is just, you know, again, going back to the basic organizing methods of getting the people to put the pressure on their elected officials.
Okay. Is it just logic? It was logical progression?
It was, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, just we want to set the stage here. What were the conditions as you saw them and experienced them for farm workers in the 1960s in Stockton and Delano and different places?
Well, in the 1950s, the farm workers were only earning about 50 cents an hour. We had the Bracero program where they brought in the Mexican from Mexico and gave them really all of the better jobs, and then the local people didn't have any work at all. So it was just a very miserable time. There was no such thing as unemployment insurance. People could not even get surplus commodities, so people were just very hungry. And then they didn't have enough money to buy furniture. People had orange crates and apple crates for their furniture. Children were barefooted. And it was just a very terrible time. They had to move to follow the crops after one season ended. They just had to follow the crops to the next season so that they could continue to eat. And that meant that the children didn't go to school. There were no such things as toilets in the field, cold drinking water. Entire crews had to drink out of one beer can or soda can that would have the top, you know, taken off. And like 40 people had to drink out of one can. There were no such things as rest periods. People worked from sunup to sundown. It was just, I remember going into homes where people didn't have linoleum or wood on their floors, just dirt floors. And it was just a terrible situation for workers.
But these conditions, these are conditions that are inhuman, that they're close to slavery. I mean, what, I'm trying to get a sense of what were these the growers thinking? Why were these people who were making lots of money treat the Mexicanos and the Filipinos and other farm workers so badly?
Well, the employers, you know, in California, the agricultural employers got everything for free. They got the land for free, they got the water for free, and of course, they wanted to get the work for free also. And the way that they used to justify this to the public, and I'm quoting from some of their representatives who would testify at these legislative committees in Sacramento, California, at the Capitol, and they would say, well, we do these farm workers a favor. We do the public a favor by giving them a job because these are people who are degenerates, they're alcoholics, they're winos. And so we actually do the public a favor by giving these people work.
This is how they were able to rationalize it.
That's how they rationalized it.
But didn't they, I mean, in your encounters with the growers, what was your feeling of how, was that your feeling, or what did you perceive of how they perceived you and these farm workers who dared to stand up to them?
Well, when we started organizing, the way that they called us communists, that we were, you know, people who were just trying to agitate, outside organizers, pretty much the way that they painted the organizers that were, you know, in John Steinbeck's books, in Dubious Battle and The Grapes of Wrath, we were like outside agitators. This is the way that they painted us, and that their workers were happy, that they were contented. They literally have the, and still have the idea that they do the workers a favor by giving them a job, that the workers owe them something because they give them a job.
Where does this come from?
This is an employer mentality, I believe.
Okay. Now, how did, at that period, say in the 60s, when you're starting to organize, how did you and other organizers and the farm workers, people you were representing, perceive them?
Well, we actually started organizing farm workers in the 1950s because in the community service organization, we set up farm worker committees under the leadership of Ernesto Galarza. Ernesto Galarza had received a grant from the Butchers Union, and So we set up these farm labor committees under the auspices of the Community Service Organization. Then so CSER did a big project in Oxnard, and I was, of course, doing the project that I was doing in Stockton, and we were both organizing. The employers, the other thing that we need to throw into this mix is that the employers are really very racist. You know, this is back in the 50s, mid-50s, and the early 60s, and they really did. I remember a grower saying that they liked to hire Mexicans and Filipinos because they were close to the ground, and they were better pickers because they were close to the ground. And the same thing they would say about hiring children, that the children, and for picking prunes, it was good to have the children out there because they, you know, they could pick up the prunes a lot better because, again, they were closer to the ground. So it's totally a sort of a racist mentality. You know, seeing the workers as tools, not as human beings, not as people. When you can think of why would they not provide toilets? Why would they not provide drinking water? These are workers. These are people. And yet not even giving them those basic rights. I served on a commission in the early 70s where there was a woman who was a peach grower. And we brought up the whole issue about having the toilets in the field. And her answer was, well, you know, they really don't know how to use the toilets, the workers. They don't know how to use them. And although this sounds so outrageous, hearing that back in the 70s, and yet later on in negotiations, I would actually have employers tell me the same thing. Why should we bring out the portable toilets? The workers don't know how to use them.
That's astounding. I don't think people, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to have to hear this story. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to watch this. I don't think they're going to be able to comprehend it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I mean, they had this attitude of the workers are less than human. Mm-hmm. But when knowing that, I'm trying to understand how you could even deal with these people. Mm-hmm. Were you angry, or you know, how did you perceive these people who were basically not respecting you as a human being? How were you able to actually organize and even talk to these folks?
Well, the only way that you can deal with people that have that kind of mentality is that you have to put pressure on them because they really don't understand reason. They've been raised to think the way that they do. They justify the treatment that they give workers by making them inferior people. And it's just like racism. If people of a different color, then somehow they're not, you know, total people, you know, because they are a people of color and they're not white. And it's almost the same type of mentality that they have towards the farm workers. Because farm workers were Mexicans, they were Filipinos, they were Asians, they were Arabs, and of course African Americans. So it was that same kind of mentality that somehow they felt that they owed them something, that the workers owed the employers something.
So I guess early on you realized you had to fight fire with fire. Is that correct?
Well, the wonderful thing about learning how to organize the way that we organized, and we organized in a nonviolent way. During that time, period of time we were organizing in the early 60s, there were a lot of people that thought, no, you should use violence. But we adopted the philosophy of nonviolence early on, again following the footsteps of Dr. Martin Luther King, who was organizing at the same time that we were, and because he, like Cesar Chavez, were, you know, students of Gandhi. And so they wanted to follow the Gandhian principle of being able to make changes just the way that Gandhi did in India and what Dr. King was doing in the South. We wanted to do the same thing in Delano with the farm workers.
And that caught on very early on. Is that correct?
Well, it was actually very deliberate in our early organizing. The growers, of course, responded almost immediately with violence. When we had our first strike, the first day that people went out there with their picket signs that said huelga, you know, that which meant strike, the growers pulled rifles on people. They beat some of the workers up. They tried to run us down with their cars. I almost got run down. With one of the growers trying to run me down with a car. And so right in those first few days, there was a lot of violence. Many of the Filipino workers who had been the first ones to go out on strike, they actually locked them inside of their labor camps. They turned off the lights, they turned off the gas, they turned off the water so that they wouldn't be able to even cook for themselves. And these labor camps were many miles from town. I mean, they were like maybe 20 miles from the nearest town. And so that was very important then to right away set the philosophy of the organizing and of the strike that we are going to do this nonviolently. Even though the growers are using violence against the strikers, we are going to respond nonviolently, and instead we're going to peacefully picket. And then, of course, later on, we adopted the boycott as a nonviolent economic tool to be able to win.
Okay. Now, I'm going to step back a little bit. We're going in this direction, but I wanted to get a sense of what was going on with the Mexicano group and the Filipino group prior to that summer of 1965. At that point, were you getting ready to strike, or can you give us a sense of what was going on?
Well, the Filipinos had gone on strike in the Coachella Valley. The Coachella Valley grape harvest is only a six-week harvest. And but they had gone on strike, and they were able to get a wage increase to $1.25 an hour. By the time in 1965, the wages had gone up to like about 70, 75 cents an hour. So they went on strike for $1.25, and they were able to achieve that. So then when they came to Delano, then they also decided they were going to have a strike then in Delano. I had initially recruited Larry Eatleong in Stockton when I first formed that first group called the Agricultural Workers Association. And when we formed AWOC, which I was the first secretary of AWOC, we hired Larry Eatleong. So Larry and I had kept our communications up throughout those years. So when they came to Delano to do that grape strike, then I was there at that meeting, and they decided to go on strike. And so they did. The Filipino workers went on strike. We and the National Farm Workers Association did not support the strike immediately because we weren't sure whether it would just be a work stoppage or a strike. But because the Filipinos were received with such violence by the growers that then we decided to support them a week later.
Let's stop at the
J. Yeah, the J. That was a good place to stop, okay. So I think you answered my next question. Over this again, and I'll ask the question a little bit differently. You started out organizing with a Filipino group, right?
No.
No, you didn't. You started organizing with Caesar, but you said you hired.
No, that was way before. It was a different organization.
But then
That's before we started the NFLA.
Get a sense. We need to get a sense of what was going on in that.
This was under CSO. With CSO, it was.
You did the organizing.
Yeah. We set up these farm labor committees, okay? And then, actually, we formed another union, too. That one fell apart, too. That was under the meat cutters. But Galarza, because Galarza was not an organizer. He was an intellectual. But are we rolling?
Yes, we're rolling now. Yeah. Now, trying to get a sense of what was going on that night, that summer.
Under the auspices of the community service organization, we set up these farm labor committees. We formed one group of farm workers, and then we turned that over to the meat cutters union. That was under Dr. Galarza. Ernesto Galarza had got some money from the butchers. And so we formed one group, of which we turned over to them. And then that group sort of fell apart. So then we formed another organization called the Agricultural Workers Association, and that was had different groups in it. It had the Filipino workers, the African-American workers, the Okies, the Anglo workers, and, of course, the Mexican workers. And once we got that group formed with several hundred farm workers in that group, then we invited the AFL-CIO to come and visit. And, of course, when they saw this large group of people, they were just blown away. So then they decided to send an organizer to Stockton. His name was Norman Smith. And that was the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, or AWOC. Larry Eatleong was hired by myself. I chose all of the volunteers that had helped me form the first group, the AWA, Agricultural Workers Association. I hired them to be part of AWOC. And so Larry and I were close because I'm the one that recruited him. When I was forming the Agricultural Workers Association, AWA, I went to all of the different Filipino pool halls and the card rooms and said, we want to start an organization of farm workers. Can you give me the name of someone that could help me? And everybody kept saying this one name, Larry Itliong, Larry Itliong, Larry Itliong. And so I finally found out where Larry lived, went to visit him, and recruited him to help.
Okay, okay. Now, but did you have a sense, and you and Caesar and some of the other folks have a sense that there was going to be a strike in that fall of 1965?
Did you? Well, this was a few years later. Then under AWOC, which I worked for also as a secretary and for the organization, then I left the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee because they started working with labor contractors. While we were forming this second group, AWOC, Caesar was organizing in Oxnard, and he also organized a large group of farm workers, which he turned over to the Packing House Workers Union. And after he turned that group over, that fell apart also. So seeing that neither one of these organizations that we had helped organize, I in Stockton, he in Oxnard, had really taken roots. Then at that point, then the community service organization was going to support us so that we could do a pilot program of organizing farm workers in Oxnard. But then at the convention, they voted it down. So at that point, that's when Caesar said, farm workers will never have a union unless we do it. And that was when we decided to start the National Farm Workers Association.
So what kind of a union did you and Caesar envision?
Well, we started doing grassroots organizing, just the way that we had organized the community service organization. We had actually wanted to organize the whole Central Valley, and that was our initial plan, and then do a general strike. But that never happened because the Filipino workers under AWOC, Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, went on strike in the Coachella Valley. And they did get a wage increase of up from 75 cents to $1.25. And so then when they came to Delano, then they were talking about doing another strike in Delano. But the difference was that in Delano, it's a much larger crop because there are thousands of people that work in Delano, and the majority of those workers are Mexican workers, Mexican-American and Mexican workers. And so at first, we waited to see whether it was going to be a real bona fide strike. And then when we saw that it was a strike, the Filipino workers were met with so much violence that the Mexican workers all got together. We took a vote. And on September the 16th of 1965, then the Mexican workers also went on strike.
And the reaction to when the growers, when they saw that there's these two big groups are going on strike, what happened?
Well, at first, the growers, I think, were in denial. They tried to arrest Caesar to try to get him to, they claimed it was protective custody because two of the big, very large growers tried to intimidate Caesar, but they arrested Caesar, not the growers. And they said that they had taken him in for protective custody. Of course, they released him shortly afterwards, but I think they were stunned. They didn't really expect these workers to go on strike. Also, there were a lot of Puerto Rican workers that were also involved in that strike in 1965.
Okay. But they reacted violently too, didn't they?
They continued. They reacted violently when the Filipino workers went on strike, and they continued to react very violently to it when the Mexican and Puerto Rican workers went on strike also.
Okay. Can you give us a sense of what was it like, let's say, the first 6 months of the strike? What was the feeling?
It was very difficult because, number one, there was no money at all. I mean, everybody was paying for their gas expenses because, you know, these fields are huge. You're talking about thousands of acres, and farm workers would get in their cars and they would go from field to field asking the strike breakers that the growers were bringing in to come out and join the strike. So there was a lot of expenses there, and every day workers would have to, you know, provide their own food, and they weren't working, so it was very difficult for them also to be able to pay their rents or whatever. So it was a very difficult time. So we had to then reach out to the public and ask people to send us a food, to send us clothes, and it was very it was very difficult, because these were families. You had men and women and even their children that were out on the picket line. But then, shortly after the strike started, caravans of food started coming in to feed the strikers, and clothes and money. And then we were able to appeal to organizations like the Friends, the Quakers, and so then they started getting money, raising money for us so we could help people pay their rents. But it was hard. People literally lived off of the food donations, and they lived off of the clothes donations that came in, because there really was not any money at all. People had $0, and the money that we raised was, had to go towards the expenses of the strike, all the money that we were able to get. Then, of course, farm workers went out to the different cities, and to Los Angeles and San Francisco, going to churches and to union halls and community organizations, asking for help for the strikers, for the Delano grape strikers.
Okay, I'm trying to get a sense as the strike wore on, and you said it was really very, very, very hard. When you started to get the help from the students and from the churches and all that, what did it mean?
The help that we got from the students and the churches, this was so important, because this is became sort of the lifeblood of the union. I mean, of the strike. Without that help, it could not have survived. It would have been impossible, because they helped us raise some money for to feed the people. The other thing too is that, people were out there all day long. People had to be out there early in the morning before the growers were bringing the strike breakers, and then they had to stay there till the sun went down, so to speak, till they stopped working. And then in the evening, going to people's homes, following the people who the growers had brought in to break the strike, asking people, please don't break our strike, Then we would try to get money to give them a bus ticket so that they could go to another part of California to work, and so they wouldn't break the strike. And it was a very, very intense. And, of course, the police were out there on the picket lines every day. The growers were out there harassing the strikers. They would put their tractors out there to blow dirt in people's faces. And it was just very, very intense.
Okay. Now, as the strike wore on, things got harder. And I tried to get a sense, after a couple of years, were people being worn down? Were they becoming impatient? Were they saying maybe we should fight back with violence?
Well, a few things happened. First of all, after we had been on strike from September the 8th, then in the spring, the strike had been on for 6 months then, and then, the publicity had sort of died down, and donations weren't coming in as much as they had been before. The growers were not signing. They had increased the wages in the meantime, but by this time, we had decided that we're going to go to get recognition for the union, not just for a wage increase. So then we met, and we decided that we had to do something dramatic, and that's when the decision was made to the march to Sacramento. And so we did this march during the Lenten period, and again, we made it a peregrinación, which is a pilgrimage. And the idea was that people in this pilgrimage would also be talking about and thinking about the things that they had done that were wrong, not just with the growers. And it was sort of a, that's why you call it a pilgrimage, because it's an offering. And so people then marched from Delano to Sacramento, which is like 300 some miles during the Lenten month. And it took almost an entire month to march to Sacramento. And we arrived in Sacramento on Easter Sunday. And, of course, Cesar was the one that led the march, and people got blisters. And every night during that march, there was a nice rally. Luis Valdez and Teto Campesino would perform. So it was very, very beautiful. It was interesting, because when these strikers left Delano, California, when the strikers left Delano, California, there were maybe about 70 strikers. By the time they got to Sacramento, there were 10,000 people that were there, because the pilgrimage went to all of the little farm worker towns. They didn't go through the main towns. They went to the farm worker towns to let them know what the union was about. And so, in a way, the pilgrimage was also organizing the farm workers of the Central Valley on the way to Sacramento.
Okay. So for people who don't understand, as a Catholic, as a Catholic, I understand.
We should change that.
Okay. Let's change.
Because a lot of people don't, I think, are not going to understand the whole.
On the 10